Accession number 30623, reel 4.
Accession number 30623, Mr. Terry O'Leary, reel 4. Now, the next thing is to go on to your actual wireless training,
yes.
And Morse code or whatever you did. Now, take me through, how did they start training you properly as a wireless operator? Or
well, the first thing was to recognise the Morse sounds for the letters of the alphabet and numerals. And that was a daily occurrence. Where
how did they actually do that?
By telling you the letter that they were going to... That you had a chief and a petty officer who were controlling the class, and they would say, right, I'm now going to send the letter A, and that is made up of one dot and a dash. And if you listen... I'll send that, and you had earphones on, and from a sender at their desk, which was wired up to all the members of the classroom, they sent this dot and dash, and then sent it again, and then you had to do it yourself on your key that was on your... Everyone had a Morse key, and you sent it out, a dot and dash for A, then they would say, we'll now do a B, dash and three dots, and you would send that out. Then they'd say, right, let's go back to the A. And it was a question of sort of drumming it into your mind to, and also in your off time, you had to, they told you to practice with just your fingers doing the job until you became proficient, first of all, of learning the Morse code for the alphabet and then the numerals. And once you drummed that, once they got that established, which, you know, it varied with different people. Some picked it up very quickly and some not so quickly, but they then...
How were you? Where did you...
Well, I suppose I would call myself average. I wasn't sort of... I picked it up, but I must confess I was a great worrier, and I was rather concerned that if I didn't pick it up, we'd been told that we'd be reverted to another branch in the engine room as stokers, which wasn't considered very au fait. And so one felt that one had to learn it. And so, you know, in the evenings sometimes you'd be sitting there trying to drum this alphabet into your head and to maintain the fact that you could, if someone just gave you a letter, you could put it into Morse code.
Now, were you learning anything else but Morse code at the time?
No, that's all I was... Oh, we did... I had to pass a swimming test.
Tell me about that.
You had to wear... You were issued, apart from other things, with a, what they called a duck suit. I don't know what it meant, but it was spelt D-U-C-K, duck suit, and it was a canvas white suit, rather like the Navy Surge, but white canvas. And what one had to do was to put on swimming trunks. Then, over that, you put the duck suit, which unfortunately sort of held a great deal of water, and you had to swim one length of the baths, what would that be, about 33 and a third yards, I suppose, to obtain your certificate for swimming.
And you managed that?
Oh, yeah. Well, because in my youth, or I failed to mention, in my youth, I did attend a swimming bath regularly. The school used to take a swim once a week, actually.
Now, what about other parts? I mean, did you learn how to use a wireless? You know, that kind of, you know, the sort of ins and outs of valves and the rest of it?
No, because you had radio mechanics, and they specialised in all the intricacies.
Did you learn in... I know Morse code is a code, but did you learn the sort of what cipher codes?
Yes, we did a course. We did a course on naval code, it was called.
Now, tell me about that.
Well, I can't go into too deep. Well, I suppose it's okay to go into detail.
It's not secret now.
No, right? No. Well, it was... the naval code was a five-figured code. And every day you had a sheet. Well, we didn't, but the ship's captain had a sheet, or the officer of where you were had a sheet. And what you would do was you would lay the sheet down. You would then place over the... like a perspex cover which had windows in it, and when these five figures were received by you, you then, I'm just trying to think how, I know you subtracted the numbers you were receiving, or you had received, because obviously you waited till the message had ended. You then got the message pad and you subtracted the numerals from the numbers that appeared in the window on that particular day. But you didn't carry any of the digits. In other words, if you were taking, say, 9 from 7, you took 9 from 17, but you didn't carry the one over to the next numeral, as you would normally if you subtracting a 1-5 figure number from another. And that left you with a number. Then you had a fleet code book, which, when you got these numerals, you turned up and it would say, various sort of things, such as German lighter enemy lighter sighted, and it would give a bearing. Things like that, you know. It was a code, numerals, a thick book which was lead weighted, so that in the event of any damage, these books would be thrown over the side. But I would say there were also in the Navy, there were a branch called coders. There weren't many of them, but there were these coders whose job specifically was to decode the messages. Although if you were on board and there wasn't a coder, then obviously the telegraphist would do the job.
It sounds quite time consuming or difficult. I mean, was it as bad as it sounds? I mean,
more often than not, you were there receiving a signal and you passed it to the petty officer to watch, and and he would designate someone to do the job. But it wasn't all that time consuming, really. And then there was another code, and that was called the Q code. It was called the Q code because it consisted of three letters, and the first letter was always the letter Q, for Quebec or Queen or whatever they called it in those days. And the RAF used the same code. I know that because a chap who lived over the back we were discussing, he was flying aircraft around the Aegean when I was there, and you had he had the same code. He was a telegraphist air gunner, and I said once QTC means I have a message for you. That's what it meant, QTC. And I said, I called over to him when I heard that he had been in the Air Force and that. I called out QTC, and he put his hand up and came straight over. You know, what is it, he said. QRU, I remember, meant I have nothing more for you. You got to know these Q codes. As soon as they came over, you could identify them without going to a blue book, which had all the codes with their meanings in them. But
now, anything else you were any other training you were doing at Royal Arthur?
No, apart from, as I say, drill and.
What about let's look at the sort of bull side of things then. I mean, did you have to prepare for kit inspections or, you know?
There was no what they called. In the Navy, things done by the Navy are called PUSSER, P-U-S-S-E-R. PUSSER means that is a derivation of purser, who is the chap who looks after all the money and accounts on board ships. So everything that was what I would call in the Army now regimental was PUSSER there. And so when I never did kit inspections or they were, you were hostility only rating, that was your rating, hostilities only. And what they were doing, I can see now in hindsight, was just getting you trained and getting you out. That was their point of having you there. Yeah.
Now, how did you get on with the other recruits?
Yeah, fine, no problems. There were chaps from all over the country, you know, Scotsmen, Irishmen, Welshmen, and I remember one chap had a bought with him a wind-up gramophone, and he was very well liked because he had a few records, and we used to sort of sit and listen to these the records of the 40s, like, yeah.
There was no bullying at all from what?
No, none whatsoever. And in fact, a lot of people obviously don't like these Army Naval Physical Training Corps chaps. What did they used to call them? They used to swing these clubs. That's what they called them. They had cross clubs on their vests. People used to not, you know, dislike them, but weren't keen when you were with them because they worked you very hard to get you fit. I always recall one chap called McCarthy, who, when you were up at 6 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock, well, when PT early in the morning, would come round and he would inspect you like before you started your PT training when you had singlets and that. And I remember him telling me that when I shaved, which I didn't have a great deal to shave, but he assured me that. I mean, I had shaved because they issued you with razors, but I should go along my jawline because I'd shaved my face, but I hadn't gone around the jawline, and he said there was hair showing. I couldn't see any or find any, but he assured me, and I've always remembered that. So now when I shave, I always make a point of shaving very carefully down the jawbone.
And what were the instructors like generally? I mean, were they, did they know their business? Were they good?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, because basically for, 5 or 6 months, all I came in contact with were these petty officers who, and chief petty officer, who were telegraphists. And they were the only real people that I had contact with. Obviously, we had an officer who was in charge of the, like a lieutenant or second lieutenant. But the thing that always sticks in my mind was the Sunday morning parades. For some reason, I don't know why, I really enjoyed that. It was called divisions. Every Sunday morning, you got dressed in your best gear and you marched from your barracks down to the main square with the Royal Marine Band. And they had everybody fill in, and it was rather like a glorified inspection by the commanding officer, who would sort of walk round and have a few words. But the thing that I recall very vividly was that the Royal Marines would play the national anthem, and then they would play the national anthem of one of the three forces that I told, that I said were stationed there. One day it would be La Marseillaise for the French, then you had the Belgians, national anthem was played, the Norwegian national anthem, and gradually one became to recognise the national anthems of these other navies that were, there were only small groups of them, I should think not more than about 40. What they did there, I really don't know. I don't know what they were doing there. We never saw them training or that, when they went away to train, but I can recall them all in different uniforms.
Now, what about entertainment? I mean, canteen?
Yes, they had a hall there, a large hall. Being Batlings, it was a hall where they would, I suppose in these days, would entertain. It had a stage and seats and upper deck sort of things, seats up in the gods. And I think once a week they laid on... I'm not sure whether it was once a week, but they laid on sort of a variety show. But it was mainly made up of chaps who were in Royal Arthur serving at that time. Some of them were permanent staff, some of them were like me, hostilities only racing. And I can remember sitting there one time where a chap in Navy uniform, I thought it was rather odd, and he was singing The Road to Mandalay. Very good, I suppose. I mean, I couldn't appreciate it too much. I'd never heard it before, but I can always remember this chap singing The Road to Mandalay in a very, very nice, deep voice. Yeah.
Was it a wet canteen or a dry one? I mean, did they serve beer? You were teetotal. Well,
yeah, yeah. No, it was dry. It was dry, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Were you allowed out?
Yes. Once you had got the rig, and I think after about 4 weeks when you had learnt to wear the rig, We used to get a bus to go down, catch, they used to call pipe, Liberty Men Fall In. When they say pipe, that's a, they had loudspeakers all around the place, and a bugler would, marine bugler would sound the call, which you obviously got to learn, and then they would pipe, Liberty Men Fall In, and they would have what they called Liberty Boats, although of course, because they used to run it in a ship, naval type establishment, even though it was a barracks, and you knew that there were Liberty Boats at say 1700 hours, 1730, 1800 hours, and so you decided which Liberty Boat you wanted to go out on, as they called it, and you fell in down by the guard room where you were inspected by an officer before you were allowed ashore. They made sure you had contraceptives because they used to issue them. Well, I mean, you went in to get them. Everybody went in to get them, but I can't recall using them, but I didn't even know what they were, actually. But and you stuffed them in your cap. That's where we kept them. We had slots in the cap inside, and you put these a contraceptive in there. The medical officer had already given us a big lecture about venereal diseases, and that's another thing that you got while you were there. You got lectures from various departments, the medical, he was about your cleanliness and how it was necessary to make sure that you know, you washed, and then he would go into more details about venereal diseases and the problems of going with loose women, and then the padre, he would follow and give you a lecture on religion. These were the, you know, these things come to mind now. This is what.
So you were going out. So where would you go?
Only down to Skegness.
Down to what would you do there? Because you didn't drink, or perhaps
No, I didn't. No. I was too, you know, because you had a station card. It was a cardboard card that opened about 2 inches square. About 2 inches square, and it opened it. It was called your station card. It had your name, your number. You were either, what division you were in, you were either top, forecastle, or I can't remember most of them. But anyway, where you were, that's just where you were stationed within the barracks. Then you had your, whether you were port or starboard watch. And when... port or starboard watch, and your class number. And when you went ashore, you had to hand that in, and that was placed by alphabetically in a rack. And when you came back, you had to collect your station card so that they knew if anybody was adrift. If they didn't collect their station card, then they were adrift.
So what would you do then?
Well,
your mates.
I must confess, I started courting a young lady in Woolworths, which seemed a good idea at the time. She was on there, they used to sell coffee, and I used to spend a lot of my time drinking coffee to get acquainted with this young lady who lived, she lived in Skegness, about 17, I suppose she was. And so every chance I got, I used to go ashore and meet her and just go on the boats, you know, they had one of these paddle boat things in Skegness on the seafront, or that was still operating, I remember. And just generally mooch around, I suppose, was the word that was all.
So you'd go on your own with her rather than with your
group of lads? Oh, yeah, I did.
Did some of the others drink more? I mean, you didn't drink anything, but did...
I never knew anybody drinking there, quite honestly, at that stage. Because what I meant to tell you was, on this card, it had a G or a T. And that meant grog, which was navy rum, or temperance. And up until you were 21, they were all stamped T, which meant you weren't entitled to get rum, which they used to issue. And so all the cards were stamped T, and drinking never sort of never came into my mind. Occasionally we were allowed leave up to London, or up to the Smoke, as it was called, and we used to catch a train from Skeggy up to, I'm not sure where we came in, whether it was Euston, no, I can't recall. But then you'd go home on leave for the what they called a Friday while. It meant that you went on the Friday after lunch, and Friday while Monday you had to be back for first parade Monday morning. So that meant leaving London at round about 11 o'clock at night, getting to Skegu about in the early hours of the morning, and then walking back to the camp so that you could be cleaned up, ready for parade and instruction on the Monday.
Now, you were there about 5 or 6 months, you reckon?
I was, yeah.
So you'd be there till, what, October, November?
I was there till November, yeah.
And what about your assessment towards the this is 43, of course. Yeah. What about your assessment towards the end of the course? I mean, how were you being assessed?
Well, you had to sit the test. You would each be given a transmission by the chief or petty officer legophist, which you wrote down and received at a certain number of words a minute. You had to aspire. I can't remember. I think it was 20 words a minute was, but I mean, I'm not sure now. Memory is a strange thing, but I think it was about 20 words a minute receiving and 22 for transmitting. And once you got, and a bit of coding, you had to do some coding where they gave you the numerals and you had to decode. And on the strength of that, you either passed or failed.
And you passed.
I did, yeah. And you were then an ordinary telegraphist. That was the rating. They called them ODs for short, but it meant an ordinary telegraphist. Yeah.
Now, what happened then? You passed, that's all.
Yeah, we then went on leave for in our best suits. And then went back off leave, and you were told what port division you were going to be, or what did that come before? I think when you're like what I would call your naval number as opposed to regimental number, everybody had a number, and it was preceded by the letter C, D, or P. C was for Chatham. D was Devonport and P was Portsmouth. So you were designated your port. But I can't recall at what stage. It must have been early because we were given our numbers early.
Now, how was that done? Was it just done Londoners went to Chatham and the rest of it? Or
not necessarily. No, oddly enough, some of the London chaps went to Devonport. I've no idea who decided or how it was decided. You just suddenly found that you had my number was CJX574927, and you knew then that you were a Chatham rating, and that was what you were called, a Chatham rating.
So after leave, did you go to Chatham or?
Yes, I went. I was posted to Chatham Barracks, which was where you spent most of your time queuing up for pay because there were so many people there. And you had to do a joining routine, which was very
hard. Now, tell us about that, the joining routine.
Very arduous it was, because you had a kit bag. Wherever you went, you had a kit bag and a hammock and a small brown case. That was your travelling companions all the time in the Navy. You carried a hammock, a kit bag, and this brown case that you used just for going home on leave with your shaving gear and extra white fronts, and you went to arrived at Chatham Barracks, and you saw went into the regulating office, which is like the police of the Royal Navy, and reported in where they took your details. Then they said gave you a card which listed all the places you had to go and get a stamp. I think it was just a way of killing time, giving you something to do, because there were loads of people there and lots of people, and I think this was just a way to, you know, it kept you out of the way and kept you busy. So what you did was the first thing you had to do was to go to the hammock store and leave your hammock, and you got a stamp saying that you had visited the hammock store and your hammock had been stowed in this store. Then you enter the armory. I don't know why, because we had no arms, but you had to wait. You see, wherever you went, there was a queue, and you could be there for an hour at each blooming place, just in this queue, waiting to get this stamp to say that you had no arms, no ammunition, a stamp. Then you went off to the Vitlin office, that they told you which mess you were going to be, because the barracks was like three stories high, and there were barrack rooms, and because where you went there for your meals, when you allocated a mess, as they called it, and you got your meals there. So for lunch, if you were in Anson Block, because they were all named after sort of old admirals or whatever, and so there was Anson Block, mess number 12, and you went to Anson Block, found mess number 12, and no particular place to sit. They were just, and your food would be issued at the end of the table, and someone would, whoever happened to sit at the, usually a leading killick or a leading seaman, he would dish out the food and pass it along in plates, because unlike the army, you didn't have your own knife, fork and spoon and plate. You've got your gear at the place where you were stationed.
And what about, I mean, what were conditions like?
Pretty horrendous.
In the mess room.
Yeah, pretty horrendous they were.
Was it bunks then? Not
No. You slept wherever you could sleep. I recall one time sleeping down on the in the washroom, and waking up to a furore of blokes all splashing about, shaving, and you know, all trying to get there first, because it was, you know, it was there were a lot of people there. I mean, hundreds.
Was the food bad there? Because
sorry?
Some people have said the food was bad. Not well, always, but
I can't.
It's not a thing with you, is it? Though you don't.
No, food never seemed. But as long as I got something to eat, that seemed to. I was never pinnicky with food, and as long as you got, you used to get cheap cigarettes. I was smoking then, and as long as we had our cigarettes, and I met up with a chap there, who lived about. I don't know, he lived near East Acton, but not all that far away, about 800 yards away, and we became great muckers, as they called them, great fun. Well, they didn't call them that, that was in the army, in the navy, and we used to go up on leave, because we got leave from there, like, again, Friday Wiles, we used to go up on leave together, and I recall he was going to get engaged, and we used to have these lovely big white blankets. They were issue wool, really good thick, which you used in your hammock, and one was allocated, but you could go to the pusser stores, and you could, if you someone stole it, which was not very often. I didn't see a lot of stealing in the navy or any, but you could go there and say, you know, you'd lost your blanket, and you paid, I can't recall how much now, and I know he wanted two for his forthcoming marriage, although he'd only just going to get engaged. So I bought him one, and he bought one for himself to help with his wife's bottom drawer. But they were really, really first-class blankets, really. But you were responsible all the time for keeping them so, by doing your own dobying.
Now, what sort of duties were you doing?
I didn't seem to be doing any duties. We used to do drill in the drill shed. I remember that, like marching up and down, and about turning and saluting and navy style. And but most of the time seemed to be killing time. That's
you didn't have to, because there is a wireless station at the channel. You weren't detached.
No,
to that
never.
At all.
No. You were just in transit. That was basically what you were.
Now, how long were you there for?
That's a good question. I was there until December.
About a month or so.
Yeah, 1st December. Yeah.
Oh well, possibly less than a month. Yeah.
Yeah.
What happened then? Where were you?
Went to, I think it was Liverpool, and put on a troop ship, the Durban Castle. Was the name of the troop ship.